myself, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
So we finally got here, lads. It's championship preview time. We're in a football show. We have a hurling show today as well. So we're here. Silly season is over. No more complaining. Keane Ward and Conor Heenahan are here on a Thursday. And we're going to do a championship preview, lads. But, geez, the week that's in it, you wouldn't really think we're in championship kind of preview mode, really. It's on top of us. Again, we'll have the same complaint. We start with a complaint. I'm just kind of in complaining mood after April. Starts off with two damp squibs, really, that aren't on TV. And I don't think they're even on GA Go. So I don't know if we're going to do a podcast on Monday, because what's the point? It's a bank holiday. Why can't these two games be put till next week and have the championship kick off with Mayo Galway and actually promote this championship? You wouldn't even know it's on, lads.
No, well, we said the same thing last year as well, didn't we? You know, it seems to be just... I don't know why they do it in this fashion. Most other sporting spheres, they try to have, you know, sort of a big game in early season to try and get a bit of public interest in it. But, you know, it's just going to roll on and it'll all be about the Super 8s. It's again, it's a bit, you know, county teams are going into, you know, sort of another mini pre-season for the month of April where they've, you know, trained away, probably not really released players back to their clubs as they should have or as they were supposed to. So a lot of teams are training very, very hard and they're all going to be building up towards really, well, it's not now, it's not just yet, but it's definitely over the next couple of weeks they're going to be ramping it up into their game time. Lots of challenge matches and everything like that.
Yeah, and Mayo Galway, I suppose, Tyrone Monaghan, they're not kind of easing the wind to anything. They have to hit the ground bang straight away in May. And like, I mean, even looking at it, like, I mean, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, when Sky have the Premier League, we've a poxy clock countdown to when this Premier League kicks off. Why can't we promote this championship? Like, are RTE gone a little bit complacent in that they've had the rights for so long? Like, is there any kind of emphasis on them promoting this and making this a big deal, or can they promote something when the GAA bring out the fixtures and look what they're bloody left with for the first match? Like, how, like, I suppose if RTE, even if they want to, and maybe they do, how can you promote two games which are of very little public kind of interest to the public?
The big thing is, well, like, the GAA have always kind of, the championship is their main product, but they do a far better job of kind of promoting the league at the start. So you'll see that at the start of the league, it might be a Saturday night, it might be Dublin, Kerry, under lights or Croke Park, something like that, which is what you want to begin with, a bang.
Yeah.
As opposed to like London or New York playing on a, you know, a Saturday afternoon with two such massive games that, like, ahead of us in the next 2 weeks. But you would have thought that, like, with RTE having a massive, you know, having a massive pull of that they might be able to kind of dictate to the GAA a little. Well, we want to start this off with a bang. We want Mayo Galway first. But like, it's, as Keane said, it's always been the case. I mean, the New York always kicks off the championship and people don't really get into it until 2 weeks later.
And that's because it's always been the way.
There's a major problem here. Like, the GAA have hamstrung themselves. They've given a monopoly market to RTE, effectively.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they took the radio rights to live games away from News Talk last year. I mean, that's stupidity from the GAA. Mm. You had a station there that was promoting and kind of airing live games. You know, it's just not, it's just a stupid scenario from the GAA. They should be looking to get as much coverage as possible for all their games, and instead what they've done is the exact opposite. They've given it to just one broadcaster pretty much, and you know, they're hamstrung by their own budgets and whatnot. So, you know, if you spread that out more, you're going to get better competition, you're going to get a better service for the customer, for everyone who's listening to the radio or watching TV, and it just makes no sense. You know, when you consider that the GAA has effectively just decided that they don't care about anything apart from the inter-county game and the commercialism of that, it just makes no sense that they go this route with their broadcasting. It makes no sense to me. Like, it's completely, you know, it's a contradiction.
Yeah, and like, I mean, if RT or Sky don't want this games, and this is another thing, we know RT and Sky now are looking for Super 8 games at the expense of provincial games. So, like, the provincials are dying out, and maybe this is the final nail in the coffin where the TV companies go, we don't want these. So we're going to kick off the championship next week with Galway and Mayo. So we'll get into proper championship mode for that, because it's going to be a brilliant occasion. And sold out, you know, McHale Park. And then you've Tyrone Monaghan the following week, which could keep that momentum going, but that's not on telly because they don't want that now because they're looking for the Super 8. So, like, I mean, it's a really weird scenario. And I'm like, you look at Air Sport, and I always use them as an example. They care about their GA. They want to, they invest in it. They want to make this. You watch Vincent Sinifina, like an early season shitty enough club game, let's be honest, because I still don't get into club mode when the intercounty's on. I need to, like when I was playing, I need the intercounty to end and then refocus and really enjoy the club. But they've, like, interviews out in the field. They've got two, you know, really good pundits out in the field. And they're so enthusiastic about this game that I actually want to watch. You know what I mean? Imagine what Ayr would do with this New York Leitrim game. Like, they would make out that this is the biggest thing that's going on that weekend. Well, I just don't see that with RTE.
Well, you could absolutely sell the New York Leitrim game as a massive game. You know, you could do a lot of promotional stuff around New York. There could be a lot of talk about the intercounty players. You know, Jamie Clark, I believe, is lining out for New York, and Tom Kniff. So, I mean, there's definitely the push of this potential for New York's first victory in the championship. What effect will it? You know, there's a lot of human interest stories there that they could delve into. But I mean, there just doesn't seem to be the appetite from the broadcasters or from journalists to really get this out there. And look, maybe that's reflected by the fact that Champions League is coming to an end, and there's a lot of other sports and other things that are taking priority because they're at the business end, whereas the championship is just kicking off. But I think the GAA are doing a bit of a disservice, as they have done for a number of years, with the way they're formatting these fixtures and then with what they've done in relation to the broadcast rights.
Yeah, there's no marketing of them as far as I can see, and again they kind of bank on the massive goodwill and the huge interest that's there. But you could make that interest, like, you can always make it better. Do you know, that interest is there because, you know, it's part of life really, the GAA. But the other thing is
if you have a team, say, like in most championship seasons, you will have some sort of an underdog story, but the underdog story needs to come from the very start. I mean, who's to say, like, you could have a, you know, whoever wins between New York and Leitrim, you know, it's 50-50 game probably. But when that moves on to the next round, people have no knowledge of the players. They have no knowledge of the game. So if that's promoted and that gets out there, then all of a sudden you have more people who've seen the game. They've heard a couple of interviews with different characters that they might have come across, and they generate a bit of goodwill towards the thing, and they have a genuine interest then in following the story of that team or those players. And that's really what the thing should be about. It's about getting that sort of stuff out there to see if they can generate further interest. And because it is, you know, it's about the GAA's whole thing is about revenue generation and trying to commercialise the whole thing. That is the route that they have gone down, so it makes little to no sense to me that they wouldn't be trying to do that.
Yeah, so Declan McBennett, you might not have heard of him, maybe Connor you have, you're in the media.
Yeah.
So he's taken over from Ryle Nugent as the head of RT Sport. So he's a big GA man, big Monaghan GA man. So, like, I mean, like Ryle Nugent, his hands were tied to a certain degree.
He's a rugby man anyway.
Well, he is a rugby man, there's no doubt about that. But his hands are tied budget-wise because RTE are losing a fortune every year. So they're losing rights. They're even losing rights to rugby, which would have broken Ryle Nugent's heart.
Yeah.
So, like, they are losing rights for everything. They never lost GA rights. Now, I'd have gripes with RTE that they're not showing, they should be showing league games and stuff like that. But I think Declan McBennett could go to RTE or go to the GAA next year and say, we're not interested in the championship kicking off with that. We will promote the championship kicking off, but give us that first bit. Let that first big game, and we'll do a week lead into it. We'll have a show midweek building up. Like, we're doing a championship preview. Has there been any championship preview
exactly.
in RT?
Yeah.
There hasn't been a dicky bird.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's so complacent. It's so like we're getting away with this, so why don't we have to do anything about it? But maybe Declan will change it. Like, if he's a GAA man, surely he wants to make a huge deal out of the flagship kind of competition in the GAA calendar that RT have, and let's show a bit of pride in that.
Yeah, I know there was a call out for like ideas for a magazine kind of GAA show in the last year, but I haven't heard any follow up on it. But I was just thinking that this week, like, the New York game would be perfect for that kind of magazine kind of build up.
I said it last year. You could do mini documentaries. You could follow Jamie Clark for a week out there. You could show
Absolutely.
People what life is like out there, because I think New York could win that.
Yeah, exactly.
They have a great chance.
Yeah.
So you've done that big lead up into it, then they win, and then it's like, you know what I mean? It's like, that's why we did that, and this is. But we, like, if we were to take off last year's championship preview, lads, I said all this. Nobody listens. The GAA don't listen. The whole revamp of the championship. So they had the perfect opportunity to dilute these two games into the following week when there's lots of games and have the Mayo Galway one starting it. They didn't do it. They don't give a shit. I don't think they care. I don't think they want to listen to logic. They just want to do it the way it's always been done. And that's the frustration.
Well, they don't really care because all they're pitching it all towards the Super 8 and seeing how that will develop and all of those games and all those large attendances. They don't particularly... It seems that they don't care. Look, let's be honest about it. The GAA have made it very clear that they couldn't give a fiddler's about the club scene. They care a little bit about the National League, but not much. And it's all about the latter stages of the championship. So, look, it's a sort of an interesting time because I think that the groundswell of opinion from a lot of people around is that, you know, the engagement with GAA and how the association is moving at the minute is not the right way to do it. And a lot of people are, you know, there are plenty of dissenting voices out there.
Yeah, no, there are. But
just on the, like, if just on RTE, if you see, like, the viewing figures at the end of every year for the top 10, top 20 most watched programmes, you can guarantee that the All-Ireland Finals are going to be there for a start. So RTE might look at that and say, oh, well, you know, we're obviously covering it well because the viewers are coming on. But they, like, what they don't seem to realise that if you make a better effort, that there'll be, you can get that audience. That audience is there anyway. So, like, you'll get it for more games, like, you know, as you go on. But there has been a bit of complacency. But I know maybe McBennett coming in, because I think after this year, as you said earlier on, they'd realise that, like, the amount of games that they're going to miss out on, that next year they'll be like, right, you know, we're getting a proper structure in place for.
But, like, that's it. So the All-Ireland Final could have 1 million, All-Ireland Semi-Finals could have 700,000. But who's to say that that couldn't go to 1,000 or 1,400,000? Who's to say that if you promote it, you won't get way bigger numbers? Like, I mean, this is just logic. But anyways, don't want to talk about that too much, lads, because we want to kick off the championship preview. And I want to start with Dublin first. And in part two, then, we'll have a look at some teams that could potentially beat Dublin this year and pretty much the Super 8s, because if the TV companies are avoiding the provincials, and I've complained about the provincials for so long that three, I think Munster's so predictable, Leinster's so predictable, I think Tyrone will Ulster, and then Connacht is the only one we're talking about, but we'll cover those teams within the Super 8. So that's the way we're going to do it. So first off, we'll talk about Dublin, and Mickey Hart was talking during the week, and he was saying, he was asked a question about whether Dublin can be beaten, and he says, I think that's the case. I think whenever you keep winning and the people have the medals, it's hard to see them having the hunger they want, and you can't replace the old hands. The new ones, no matter how talented they may be, they don't have the experience, the guile of the boys that they're replacing. So I'm sure he's looking at the likes of Dear McConnelly not there this year, Bernard Brogan. You have to remember, Dear McConnelly saved Dublin in the All-Ireland Final last year. Bernard Brogan saved them the year before coming off the bench. You know, they've lost lads like Paul Flynn. Jack McCaffrey's coming back in. We're not sure how 100% he'll be. Alan Brogan's gone. Rory O'Carroll's gone. Now, we know they've won All-Ireland since Rory O'Carroll has been gone. But, like, I mean, maybe he's looking at Dublin and he's thinking that they're potentially beatable. Like, if you look at the half-forward line in 2015, which I think was Dublin's best team by a mile, All-Ireland winning team, it was Connolly, Kilkenny and Flynn. Now it's for the league final against Galway, it was Brian Howard, Kevin McManaman and Niall Scully. Do you know what I mean? Are Dublin unbeatable? Like, I know there's so much in their favour, but are they this unbeatable force?
No, I don't think so. I think that there's definitely been, it seems bizarre to say, but I would see that there's a drop off in Dublin. I see that continuing into the championship, and I think that this is the year someone will catch them. And it's not a case of not really somebody catching them. I think there will be a team in the championship that would be better than them. You can't lose that level of quality and expect it to just be replaced year on year. Like, they've done three in a row. It's just a remarkable, remarkable achievement, and their league form has been incredible along with it. But all things do eventually come to an end, and I think that this is the season where it will come to an end for Dublin. I can just see them being beaten by a team on a day. Like, they haven't been as convincing in a lot of their performances and victories in the more recent past. They have been suffering a huge amount of injuries, and, you know, with the loss, I think they've lost a bit of depth in their squad, even though they've played a number of new guys in the league this year. League football and championship football, as we all know, are completely different they're completely different styles and standards of football. So the Dubs will be exceptionally well prepared. They have a phenomenal management team. They have, you know, huge amount of talent there. But I do think that this is the year where they will get caught. I think they'll just come up short.
The difference this year, though, is that we know they won't get caught in Leinster. That goes without saying. So they're in the Super 8s. They can lose in the Super 8s. They can get caught and still win it. Do you know what I mean? So that actually adds a layer on how more difficult. And they're going to play two Super 8s in Croke Park, which is a huge advantage as well. Like, I mean, and while I did mention their half-forward line, and that's definitely weakened, like their midfield of Fenton and McCauley. McCauley's in such good form. That's a flawless midfield. That's a great kind of partnership in the work, the fetching, the class of Fenton, and that incredible engine and their full forward line looks very formidable with Rock, Kilkenny and Mannion, you know. So like, I mean, while I don't think they're as good as 15, I do think that they can be beaten. But the whole thing, if they're beaten, they're not, might not necessarily be out, and they could get the, especially with teams going for four in a row. It's often when you lose you get that kick up the arse. If lads are sailing, Dublin can get that kick in the arse in the Super 8s, and it'll completely put them on the straight line for their last Super 8 potentially, or an All-Ireland final.
Yeah, and I suppose they kind of got a kick up the arse last year with the Kerry one as well. You know, they were keen to kind of avenge that. But as you're talking about the half forward line there, like, I suppose Conor Callaghan has come in, but I would nearly argue that with Kilkenny in the full forward line, it's nearly an extra dimension to an already brilliant full forward line. Kilkenny was unstoppable during the league.
Yeah,
and I suppose the thing with like three in a row going for four in a row, that like, what people don't realise, you'd see teams that were going for kind of milestones like that, and they say, we never realised it during the year, but when we look back on it, maybe we didn't have the necessary hunger, you know. But they can never they can never tell at the time, because in the camp they're always saying the right things. Now, I don't know is that going to be a problem with Dublin, because what they have is they're likely to have more players kind of coming in every year than other teams that might have suffered from that in the past. But I don't know, I think Keane has a point that like, that while the decline in quality is very slight, you're talking about like, you still need your like kind of blue chip.
The margins were so small up to now in previous years.
Yeah,
like I do think that the loss of Connolly is a huge loss. That, you know, Paul Flynn, his fitness and injuries have taken their toll. Like, I mean, if they're losing, like, it's very difficult for us because very little information comes out of the Dublin camp. But if you were to think of it and you'd say, okay, Paul Flynn will be fit to play in some of these bigger games later on the championship. Paul Mannion will have no injury concerns, and Dermot Connolly is coming back into the setup. Then it would slightly change your view on it. You'd say, okay, well, that might just be the little edge that'll need to get them over the line. But I think that Connolly has been he was a difference maker in the All-Ireland final last year. Now, I know different guys have come up, like it was Costello the year before, and he played practically no football last year.
Yeah, Costello and Brogan.
So there's different players have come in at different times for them. But it's just, when you look at the names on the team sheet and you look at their performances that they've put into now, I don't know if those players are just as really, like, compare them against Connolly and Flynn.
Yeah.
You know, these guys that came in, like, even Flynn last year in the All-Ireland finally played 50, 60 minutes. You know, he came on early on for McCaffrey and had to go off. But he delivered a massive shift in that game that it's very difficult to say whether some of these other relatively untested players at that standard, it's unknown as to whether they can compete at that. Like, when you particularly look at it, and again, you're probably thinking Mayo are going to be thereabouts again at the latter stages. And if they are, can these new Dublin players, when it really comes to it on those big games, again get the upper hand over the likes of Mayo?
So, like, I mean, we looked at it's that 2015 team is the benchmark I'm looking at. You look at that half forward line I just mentioned, and the half back line of McCarthy, O'Sullivan and Jack McCaffrey. It doesn't get any better.
McCaffrey is a huge loss as well.
McCaffrey is, now you're looking at James McCarthy, Johnny Cooper and John Small. Still a great half back line, but it's not on that same level. And we saw their full back line can be got at. Comer cleaned up until Dublin copped on and double marked him, and Galway were stupid not to put another man in beside Comer to at least make the sweeper mark two, you know what I mean?
They're
definitely gettable. But here's a tactic, and lads, I want to throw this at you because I mentioned it to Conan and he kind of dismissed it, so I'm going to get a second opinion on it. And this will only work against Dublin because Dublin play orthodox as much as possible, and we know there's a lot of people say, oh well, Dublin will end up with 13 men behind the ball at times. Yes, they will, generally against defensive teams who are pushing, you know what I mean, they're following their men. The defensive teams could have attacking cornerbacks, so suddenly Dean Rock finds himself back there, he doesn't want to be back there. In general, Dublin will stay as orthodox as possible. So you drop men back, And I thought I saw a bit of evidence of this in the league final with Galway. So you drop men back and say you have 12, 13 behind the ball. So you're frustrating Dublin, etc., etc. You turn the ball over. Bang, turnover. In the last 7 or 8 years, what have teams been programmed to do? Break at speed. Go, go. Everybody break. Catch them out. Dublin don't fall for that anymore. They're too clever. They're leaving lads back and they're tracking the runners with intensity. They're just too good. So how about when you get the 13 men back, you turn it over. You're guaranteed to have a few extra men back there. Instead of that scramble to break fast, how about just relax? Play it across the line of the defence. Let your forwards reset and then bring on your attack. Because Dublin won't drop lads back. So you'll defend with 13, but you'll attack orthodox. Do you know what I mean? In theory,
Dublin press high though, don't they?
That's the way Dublin play. When Dublin turn the ball over, they're very rarely are they in a big rush forward. Dublin are a very slow, methodical attacking team, which has developed over the last number of seasons. And that's because they want to get their players back up the field.
Reset.
Yeah.
See, the reset.
You have to do that. We speak a lot about how you want to press up on the kick out, but you can't do it if you get a score on the counter attack because you're outnumbered with your forwards and it needs to be maybe after a free when everybody has the time to get up the pitch. Well, it's the same concept if you turn the ball over and you only have two lads up the field.
Yeah.
If it's on early and it's 2-on-2 or it's 3-on-3, then yes, the ball has to go and it has to go quickly by the foot. But if you turn the ball over and you can see, Jesus Christ, lads are after, this has been an intense few minutes here, we'll get the ball forward but we won't get support up, the lad will win the ball and he'll eventually just run out of steam.
He'll be double marked.
That's the time that you slow it down. We've seen Dublin do it so many times and it is... They've taught everybody else really how they've evolved the game to an extent that everybody needs to learn from it, and Galway kind of did a bit of that in the league final, but I suppose maybe they're just not quite as proficient at it just yet as Dublin are.
But you see, this is the thing. Dublin will do that and they have been doing it, but Dublin don't care that the opposition are going to filter back because they know they'll break that down. Yeah. But against Dublin, Dublin won't filter back. This is why I think this could really work. Do you know what I mean? I know Dublin do it, but Dublin do that against anyone. But what I think this would work against Dublin is because Dublin won't naturally filter everyone back if your defence... So when you win the ball over, just let your forwards go back up. But your defence is told not to be, you know, not to necessarily attack and drag too many men with you, but leave it up there that when we're attacking then, suddenly the game will be reset. And it'll be almost orthodox when you're attacking, but it'll be very defensive when you're defending.
Of the teams that could do that then, that could potentially challenge Dublin, who would you say is best equipped to? Because I would say, like, for example, the Tyrone's game is so built on breaking a pace that I wouldn't see, I'm not sure how quickly they could adapt. And I don't think it suits Mayo either, for example, because Mayo...
No, I think
Mayo's
are happy with what they're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're potentially looking at like a teams that naturally drift bodies back, which is probably Galway. If that tactic was to be used, it would probably be best used by Galway.
Yeah, maybe it is.
Galway, Monaghan, Donegal to a lesser extent. They're probably the other three teams that would have the capacity to play that.
You're just trying to think.
Because you need to, when you're slowing the game down like that, though, you need to have good decision makers on the ball. So again, you're looking at what teams have, you know, lads that look very comfortable on the ball. You know, they're not going to make daft decisions or run themselves into trouble. You know, we speak about it a lot here. The longer you have, you know, good players, the longer they have the ball, the more time and space they have. Bad players, the longer they have it, the more likely they are to mess it up. Like there's so many players at these top level teams that are very comfortable in possession, you know. And what you're always trying to do from an attacking perspective is isolate one-on-one, ideally with a mismatch, you know, big fella marking a little fella, you can float a quick guy on a slower guy. But it's always to try and get the one-on-one. So, like Dublin, to a certain extent, will play an attacking game plan or they'll play quite orthodox. So if you know, if you don't flood that zone with your own runners, as you've said, from your half-back line, they're less likely for their half-forwards to drop off. Their midfielders might drop off or centre-half-back might drop off. But like the thing about it is, there's so much space in Croke Park that if you don't drag too many men up the field on your own attack, if you try to use the ball, like, again, there's so much ball carrying going on, you know, a more beneficial attack employing Croke Park is definitely using the ball with the foot, but you need links in the chain up the field so that there is a target in each line to kick it to.
That's the thing, and that's why if you don't break too fast and have it all disorganised and wait and let your half forward line reset, you have a much better structure in your attack. You know what I mean? You can actually move the ball through the foot, and I think it could work. Just trying to think of ways, because I think Dublin are in their comfort zone tactically, because Kerry are trying to man up on them. It's not working. Mayo are the only ones, and I genuinely think that obviously we know Mayo can match them physically. Mayo can match them with the, taking the home venue of Croke Park away from them, to take half the hill, which I think is a huge, everybody knows the advantage of going to Old Trafford and silencing the crowd. That's a massive, it Mayo take that off them, because their fanatical support, I think that's a big thing. But just tactically, maybe for some kind of a manager to pull something out that Dublin haven't seen before. Like we saw last night in the junior game with the Mayo Fly goalkeeper. Did you see that? Sean Boylan's son scored a goal to beat Roscommon, and they brought an outfielder out. Brought on an outfield player. I'm not sure where Boylan plays, Connor. You probably know.
Well, Boylan scored the goal, but the player they brought on was Matty Flanagan, who would have been a former minor keeper, but plays outfield for his club.
So, like, I mean, are you telling me that Tyrone need a goalkeeper? Do they really? Do they need a goalkeeper when you're that defensive, or can you play last man back? Because what does a goalkeeper do these days now with the short kickouts that an outfield? Like, genuinely, I don't want to disrespect goalkeepers too much, but any outfielder worth his salt can play in goals. I genuinely think I used to play in goals for the school team. I was sub goalkeeper actually for under 14. I used to be livid, but I played goalkeeper. I don't know how, just an idiot manager, I don't know how he got this in his head, because I was midfield for Port Leash winning county titles and this lad plays me sub goalie. But I think he was trying to piss me off because I messed
teach
in
you
class. But like, I easily played in goals. Now obviously, like, if you were to knuckle down on it, are you telling me that Tyrone can't play Cottle McCarron as a goalkeeper and have an extra outfielder?
But you only have to look at it. I mean, there's no difference in the rule between your outfield player and your goalkeeper. What is
But
the
all
point?
Goalies aren't necessarily comfortable. Like Brody from Leash, you can see the impact he has as being a completely comfortable on the ball.
Rory Began has shown the way for goalkeepers, but like, even I can even remember myself playing an under 12 match, and you know, you could be playing the game, it's like, alright, you know, go into goals there for a while, but sure, no sooner were you into goals you were supporting the attack. Because it just made sense. Oh, Jesus, sure, there's no one marking me now, I can get on this ball handy and drive forward. No, you know, it just, it's beyond belief that this is not a common tactic in the game. It's actually mind-boggling.
It's an extra player.
It's just so ridiculous. It's the same as for years having the bean poles in the middle of the field, and then somebody decided to put a more athletic runner there and pop kickouts out to the wing, win every kickout, don't need to lamp it down the middle. Like, how these small things that are so obvious to anybody who watches any sort of sport, how they're not common practice is to me mind blowing.
Well, Brody's the perfect example. If you haven't even saw the league final against Carlow, like, man, this lad causes kind of chaos when he comes out with the ball, because whatever it is about the goalkeeper's jersey, it causes chaos. It's a different colour, and suddenly he's out around here, and like, I mean, Brody played wing forward for Port Leash, so he's totally at ease out there, and even he can take him, he'll take a man on if he needs to. But that's definitely it's definitely something we're going to see a lot of in the summer.
But he can still be in goals a lot of the time as well. You know, it's not as if he's playing in the full forward line. Do you know, when the attack slows down, he can still get into position to have to save it where it needs to be. But just going back, like, you can see the absolute.
But wouldn't it totally throw a team to have the goalie in the goalie's jersey 100%. Starting wing back and an outfield player in the goals? Like, it really would. Wouldn't
see the panic when a goalie comes up to take a long range free or a 45, and if he misses it and the ball is still in play, the absolute panic where you're just thinking, just kind of goes there for a minute.
Because Fergal Byron used to take our 45s back in the day, and obviously when he goes up to the 45, so just everyone just drops back a line and you end up with a corner back standing in the goals until he gets back. But that whole principle is very easy, cover him when he goes. That's not difficult, and it makes it even easier when you're a defensive team who's going to have two sweepers back there anyway.
But you're even thinking the logic. What in the name of God is the point in having a lad standing back on the line
doing
when the
nothing.
Ball is 80 yards away the other end of the field?
Yeah.
I mean, goalkeepers should really be playing in an almost a sweeper capacity there for a lot of the game, and, you know, have the ability then to drop back into goals when somebody is within shooting range. But I mean, prior to that, I mean, they're just a wasted number.
Yeah, they are a complete wasted number.
In the club game, you know, fair enough, it's everyone's going to stick to what they know and keep it safe. But when you get to county standard, there's so many, every player is such a good ball player, so fit, so tuned in, they're doing so much training, that when they have possession, they should never lose it in a one-to-one contest. Never. You should never lose the ball if there's only one guy tackling you, if you're a county footballer. Yeah. Never. So there's no risk for the goalkeeper. The only risk for the goalkeeper is that the guy who's going to lay the ball back to him or give it to him off the shoulder makes an error. It's not the goalkeeper's fault. Yeah. You know, so if the goalkeeper is moving and supporting the play, I mean, if the lads on the team aren't good enough to find him with the ball, who's a completely free player, well then they're at fault, not the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Whereas, what will happen is if a goalkeeper goes out the pitch and some error occurs, the goalkeeper is going to get the blame. So that's just a mindset that a manager of a team can say, lads, I don't care what the crowd are at. When the crowd see the goalkeeper going out the pitch, everybody panics because they haven't seen it before. Within two, three seasons or two or three games, it becomes the norm.
Yeah.
And everybody copies it and everybody will be doing it. And people are used to seeing it. And the next thing that's going to happen is you'll be giving out about the goalkeeper who's in on the line, saying, why is he not going out supporting the attack?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what will happen.
Yeah. No, that's what's going on. In fairness to McGeaney, he's the first I saw doing it. He tried to do it against Cavan. They lost against Cavan. I think maybe one or two kickouts might have gone astray. No, I think his kickouts were... It just looked a bit random. And I think because Armagh lost, the whole thing was wrapped up into a bad performance. And it was a bit, what is he doing? But McGeaney obviously was ahead of the curve by thinking about this, because I genuinely think this summer we're going to see an awful lot more about it. But lads, we've gone overboard on Dublin. We'll come back and we'll predict the Super 8s and who can challenge them.
I've had fellas follow me. And not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. and it does happen. Yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot. And the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was, maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like the reality is that there was contact and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering if he had the same match as me. He was kind of making out terrible but unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and
100% reason to remember the name. Okay, Super 8s, lads, and we're going to try and predict the Super 8s because obviously the team that beats Dublin or potentially beats Dublin or challenges Dublin is going to come from that. So the first group in the Super 8s is going to contain the Munster champions, the Connacht champions, the Ulster runner-up or the qualifier team that they play, and the Leinster runner-up or the qualifier team that they play. So this is actually a more difficult one to predict because we're looking at Kerry Munster champions are going to be in it. Connacht champions, very difficult to predict. So that's a toss-up between Mayo and Galway, I think. I think most people would agree. No disrespect to Roscommon. In fairness, they were able to beat Galway last year. Not sure to do it again this year, but you wouldn't know. And then we have to have the Leinster runner-up. Are Leinster runner-up strong enough to beat the losers of Mayo Galway or the losers of Tyrone Monaghan who are coming up through the qualifiers? Arguably not, you know, so that's a difficult one. The second group then is easier. It's going to be the Ulster champions Tyrone, it's going to be the Leinster champions Dublin, it's going to be the Connacht runner-up, which will be Roscommon. They'll have to play one team coming through the qualifiers, you know, and then you have the Munster runner-up, which will be Cork or Tipperary, and they'll have two chances once they get into the final. So, like, I mean, is the Super 8s being made up of Kerry, Mayo, Galway, Monaghan, Tyrone, Dublin? They're, I think, six guarantees, all Division 1 teams. Then you have Tipperary, Roscommon, Donegal, Kildare and Cavan. They're Division 1 and 2 teams, pretty much. You know, so there's not going to be any more than that. I've Tipperary and Roscommon getting in. They're the two that have been promoted out of Division 2 into Division 1. So I almost have the Super 8s next year's Division 1. That's Donegal, Kildare and Cavan unlucky to get out. But Donegal and Cavan play in the preliminary. The loser of that has a long road back. Now, the winner of that has a nice path to the Ulster final, which, you know, would get... They'd only need to win... Even if they lose the Ulster final, they only have to win one more. So maybe Cavan or Donegal might be a good shout to get in there.
Yeah, look, it's funny the way the fixtures have sort of worked out. You've summed it up pretty well there. I mean, the teams we're talking about there, Donegal, Cavan, Kildare, the losers of Monaghan, Tyrone, I mean, they're the ones that you'd see as making the strong breakthrough. And potentially, Tipperary, Cork, loser, that could make a bit of a run, but they'd probably be slight outsiders in the overall scheme of things. you know, it's just going to be very interesting, because there is, you would like to think that there will be a couple of teams that might come and just, you know, cause a bit of a stir in the qualifiers, because the prize of getting to the Super 8 is just huge. Not only just for this season, but what it can do for a county, you know, going into next season, the confidence of playing at that standard, using your squad in those, you know, in those games,
And also even promotion of the home game, you know, promotion in the county, like a full house in Inamore Park or Navan, you know.
But also playing later in the season.
Yeah, just to kind of start dreaming about how brilliant this will be.
Yeah, Meath home to Dublin in Navan would be a hell of a game.
Yeah, there'd be only five or six in that, I'd say.
Yeah,
because it's in Navan.
No, I mean in Navan and the rivalry. You could build up the rivalry a lot more in Navan, you know, than going
up. It's nice to speculate, really, isn't it?
But like, I mean, realistically, the loser of Galway, Mayo, Monaghan, Tyrone are going to regroup and get back in. Now, we'll start with Mayo, maybe, because is there an argument? Like, I mean, you almost keep fighting the urge to say Mayo, if they lose to Galway, could they get caught? Like, I mean, how many years can they keep? Because they don't seem to get up for these qualifiers. It knocks the stuffings out of them. They're a Croke Park team. We're even wondering whether the Super 8 suit Mayo, because, again, it's not that there'll only be one Croke Park game. And Mayo seem to need Croke Park to bring out the best in them.
Terrible at McHale Park, and I don't think we're great at even. We went around the grounds last year, the provincial grounds.
And the Super 8 is obviously a much higher level of those games.
Exactly. So you've only one game in Croke Park. Like, Mayo would ideally have all their games in Croke Park. They did. But just going, like, I was kind of looking at the schedule, let's say, if Mayo were to lose. So they'd be out then three times in 4 weeks, I think, in the qualifiers, and then you're running on then to, I think it's four times in 5 weeks, and then it's three times in four weeks, and then it's right into the semi-final. So, like, if Mayo or Galway were to lose that, they have a long way back. Yeah. I think, to be honest, Galway would be better suited to a long run like that, because while Mayo built momentum last year, you just said it there, like, how long can they keep doing that? They're going to get caught eventually. I say that as Mayo man, and I'm just looking at, like, last year I think we were pretty lucky with injuries, whereas this year it's not really the case. You're looking at Lee Keegan mightn't be back until the middle of June, even though Stephen Ratchford had to rubbish that he was going to recover quickly
a little bit there.
Killian O'Connor is pulling up with a hamstring. We've only lads that are coming back now for the Galway game. Keith Higgins only back from a month. Brendan Harrison's only coming back. Tony Vaughan, Chris Barrett as well. So there's a chance that, like, if they were to lose to Galway, that, like, it might come too soon for them. I don't know. Like, it would be a seismic shock if Mayo were to lose before getting into the Super 8s. But, like, just going on the last couple of years, there have been so many near escapes that were vulnerable.
I think Mayo need to beat Galway. I think there's no doubt about that. I know need to beat Galway. Even for their own psychological, like, they can't keep losing in Connacht. Like, that's, I know it has an effect on the last couple of years.
I think they would actually be worse off if they lost the Connacht final, because you're losing a provincial final and then you're playing probably a week or 10 days later.
No, it's 2 weeks now.
Against a team that has a bit of momentum behind them. Whereas sometimes with the way the qualifiers are, if the earlier you get knocked out, you have a chance to kind of fully reprogram and say, okay, it's start of a new season now. And that has, look, Mayo have gotten through the qualifiers unconvincingly at times, but they've always found a way. So, you know, you would always question, can they keep doing it? Can they keep doing it? And ideally, listen, they never wanted to go down that route. They would always want to go the straight route. You know, the game against Galway is just, it's an ideal match in terms of a benchmark. But I don't think it will actually mean anything in terms of, you know, consider when that match will be played. It's still very much early in the championship season. So there's a, you know, the form lines from a game Mayo against Galway in the early stage of the Connacht Championship will bear no resemblance to form in the Super 8s.
No.
Yeah, and it hasn't done the last couple of years either.
It was the psychology of Mayo going into those qualifiers. They're nearly getting caught by the Derrys and by the Corks.
But
you know, and the year before there was scares as well, wasn't there, Connor?
Like, I mean, well, just so unconvincing victories over Fermanagh and Westmeath.
Fermanagh and Westmeath.
But the flip side on it is that Mayo have had so many injuries that they have a lot of guys coming back, and you could argue that having regular games in the summer is more beneficial to the likes of Chris Barrett, Lee Keegan and these guys coming back than, you know, having these one-off matches spaced in between where they end up maybe overloading
their training.
And also, if you look at what they have done in the last number of seasons, it's a completely different training regime where you're playing every week. If they now are in the scenario where they have these large gaps, or, you know, I know it's not as much as it was before, but they could have 2 or 3 weeks in between games, does that change how the management approach their training? Does mm-hmm. that leave them coming into the games a little bit flat? Like, these are unknowns for Mayo at the minute.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are speculating, but I think from a playing perspective, you don't want to lose any game. You'd like to obviously win the provincial championship and move forward. But I think that if Mayo lose to Galway, I still wouldn't rule them out. I still think that they will get to the Super 8s.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, is it fair to say that the Super 8s might not suit Mayo?
I think so. Just purely for location. Like, I think by that stage, Mayo are used to, like, late July, early August, peaking for Croke Park, yeah. whereas they're peaking for one game out of three in Croke Park. So, I know provincial, like, McHale Park has been a terrible venue, home venue for Mayo. And as I said, you're looking at playing in another provincial venue. It doesn't suit us. We're a Croke Park team. Yeah. So.
Now, you see, there's another thing of saying a Croke Park team. Croke Park team is obviously all on quarterfinal, where there's a lot of hype involved. Mm. There will be hype around Super 8, so yeah, maybe that yeah. will help the players get up. Because I actually think, because Mayo players, we've said this before, I've said it before, because they don't have huge competition for places, they need that spark, they need yeah. that hype. And Mayo do kind of work off hype, they always yeah. have done. Like, I mean, they get that role going and the county goes crazy and suddenly the players grow that little bit.
And there's way more hype for this Galway game than there's always hype around Mayo Galway, but this year in particular, just given what Galway have done the last couple of years and how well they did in Division 1, like, we're already, what, a week and a half out, but it's all people can talk about below. So
yeah,
fingers crossed, I hope so, because we've been flat as a pancake for the last two games against Galway in Connacht.
Yeah, exactly right. So Kerry, lads, is a strange one in that they've given all these good young fellas a run in the league. Jason Foley, a full back, had a torrid time against Daniel Flynn, conceded six from play but been left wide open. You would say Sean O'Shea has been outstanding when he's played. You could say you'd have no worries with Clifford, he's brilliant. Michal Burns, I think, has been brilliant. I think a lot of their young lads have shown up really, really well, you know. Like, I mean, yeah. they've been more, they're more impressive players throughout the league, if anything else. And then we have the fellas coming back. It's hard, like David Moran, Johnny Buckley, these fellas. Hopefully Donica Walsh will be back. He'll give him that little bit of extra kind of size and, you know, experience on the half forward line. Kerry are an unknown quantity because they haven't played everything, and they haven't played everyone, haven't had their full team, a bit like Mayo, and we've qualified everything throughout the league. Keen on the Monday, as in Shereman Fitzmaurice is just maybe seeing what he's like in that scenario, you know what I mean, which yeah. happens at intercounty level as well. So we're not 100% sure where they are. We know that they've got a Munster semi-final that they'll win, they have a Munster final that they'll win, then they have a nice little break, they have a lovely little run into the Super 8s, you know. They're just building up nice and slowly as the levels go up slightly, ready to hit the Super 8. Impossible to beat in Killarney, unlike Mayo in McHale Park. Yeah. The light Croke Park, like, the Super 8s will be good to should be good to Kerry.
Yeah, look, Kerry have developed a number of players during the league. They've given them plenty of exposure to top level football. I think they're in a very good place, particularly if they get a number of their more experienced guys back from injury and get a bit of game time into them in the Munster Championship. It's set up for Kerry to have a really good run at it this year, really, because they have, I suppose, the experience of a number of their kind of underage successes behind them, but they've also won a National League last year, and I suppose a lot of their players should have learned from kind of the Mayo matches last year as well, where they just came up short. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what sort of team Fitzmaurice does pick come the championship. Does he go back to the more experienced, trusted players, or does he stick with the guys who have performed well during the league.
I'd say he'll stick
I think
with
so
them.
Too, yeah. yeah.
I think the lads I've called out, I think Jason Foley starts. I think the three lads in the forwards, Burns, Clifford and O'Shea, starts. Now, whether he continues on with the midfield of Barry O'Sullivan and Jack Barry will start. Barry O'Sullivan won't because David Moran comes back in. Yeah. I think there'll be five of those young lads probably on the team, will there?
Yeah, I think so. That's a pretty big transition from last year. I'm just interested to see what kind of style of play that Fitzmaurice will adopt kind of come later in the championship.
Yeah, he's been very orthodox throughout the league.
Yeah,
right?
He has been. I remember last year in the semi-final against Mayo, having nearly won it the first day, and then the second day nearly panicking about the amount of ball that went in Danny yeah. Moran, and then dropped James O'Donoghue and played the sweeper, and it completely backfired on them. But I know he had to take kind of measures against Andy Moran, but I was surprised that he kind of threw such a spanner in the works at such a at such a big stage. But it was clear then at times during the league that, like, if you get a Kerry, they're still porous through the middle. So yeah. Has he something in mind for that?
Well, Gavin Crowley started the first two league games, right? And he looked like a natural centre-back.
Really good against Mayo.
Very good against Mayo. He scored a goal and he was an attacking centre-back when I was thinking Mayo need a specialist centre-back that'll hold the centre-back. This lad was a bit kamikaze, but he looked like he had a bit about him. Yeah. Then he got a wrist injury and then Peter Crowley was centre-back. And Peter Crowley's been centre-back a good few years now and I don't think he's nailed it down enough to go. Like, I think they need a new centre-half-back.
Yeah, well, Crowley performed well in the matches that he did play in.
He's not a natural centre-back. There's something about him that he just doesn't look like he's an intelligent centre-back.
He's a bit gung-ho, to be honest.
Yeah.
It is a position where Tadhg Morley has filled in. He's probably been the best of them that's played there. I know Killian Young has played there at times too, and he has done reasonably well, kind of more conservative sort of approach to how they play. I just don't think that playing a defensive game actually suits Kerry. I don't think it suits the players that they have. I think they need to back themselves and go out and play. And I think that Fitzmaurice I think he's going to have his mindset sort of convinced based on the replay against Mayo last year, where he did alter his strategy, played very defensive, dropped one of his marquee forwards to play defensive, and it didn't work and they were well beaten.
And got a lot of criticism in Kerry for that.
Yeah, and look, rightly or wrongly, he tried something different, but I just think that that's going to affect how he sees things this year. And I think it's actually the right approach for Kerry, for the players that they have, to back themselves and to just go out and play their brand of attacking football, as opposed to playing the game with fear and, I suppose, changing how they want to play to suit the opposition, because I don't think that it suits their players. It doesn't suit the Kerry mentality to sort of cede the advantage to the opposition or the impetus. I think they need to be a front foot team, much like the way when Mayo are at their best. That's what they are.
Yeah, no, I think that's what we'll see from Kerry. I think we will see them taking again. And even for building from the future with these fellas, like, in 5 years' time, these fellas are going to be unbelievable. You don't want to get into their heads a different kind of way of playing. So what we're left with then, that's Mayo, Kerry. I think there's only two other teams capable of beating Dublin, and that's Galway and Tyrone. And they're to a lesser extent, Mayo and Kerry a little bit above. After that, then, you're looking at the Monaghan, you're looking at Roscommon, Tip, and, like, I mean, if you bring Dublin to Clonus in a Super 8, you could give Monaghan a chance up there. But, like, I mean, outside of that, maybe not. Like, I mean, would we give Galway a chance in Salt Hill of beating Dublin in Super 8, playing their brand of football? They're definitely able to match Dublin physically.
Yeah, well, and I think Galway will have... I think that Galway will have a slightly changed approach for the Championship. I don't think that they will... play as defensively, you know, or as much counter-attacking style in the Championship as they did in the league. I think that weather conditions have played a part. I think that when pitches are faster, that style of football just won't really work as well. It won't be as efficient for them.
Doesn't work as well, no.
Yeah, and I think that for Galway, just getting to the Super 8s is a massive target for them. You know, they should get there. You know, they have the ability. Their form line suggests they should be getting there. But to get there still takes, you know, a number of big performances from them in Championship football. And over the last number of seasons, what we've seen is that they have been very hit and miss. There's been a serious lack of consistency to their performances. And they seem to have taken the defeats quite badly and not bounced back from them, as we saw from their performance against Kerry last year. So there's a lot of questions about Galway. I think that they will make the Super 8s, and I think that they will be a team that will come very close come the end of the season, because I think that they're a team that has shown that they're developing all the time. But getting to the Super 8s is crucial. That's step number one. And once they get there, I think that, you know, their season could really explode for them, because they do have a good depth in their squad. But we've spoken about, you know, what we believe are the deficiencies in their game throughout the league in terms of just playing too defensively to suit summer football. But they definitely have the armoury up front to put up big scores and to really hurt the top teams.
Yeah, and we have they actually hammered Donegal before Kerry last year, so, like, they should have been on a better roll than they were. They just didn't show up that day. I heard Kevin Walsh talking about their defensive style has been in the making for 36 months or something, he said, and he's right. He came in and he immediately had them more defensive than they were. Now Tally's come in and this year they look to be even more defensive again. But it was interesting, only three Cora Finn lads went in: Bernard Power, Kieran Malone, Malloy, who could as an attacking wing back, and Ian Burke. I was wondering, like, as it stands now, Ian Burke doesn't fit into that system. He's another little bit like maybe the Lee Brennan didn't fit into Tyrone last year, who just need Comer up there as a presence and everyone else is defending. That doesn't suit Burke. So if Burke gets on that team, it has to be two up. Do you know what I mean? And we've been calling out for two up. I'd play Burke, Comer and Walsh up and let the rest defend. Do you know what I mean? I'd even go one further and leave three up there. Imagine Shane Walsh being the one breaking out every time. Sure, no one's getting out ahead of him. No. So you've guaranteed ball one in the half forward line. Then you can start from there and work off him. And then you've got Burke's movement and Comer with another option for a high bar. Galway have so much potential of, because they have what other teams don't have. And that is lethal pace and finishing up front. So that's what we're kind of finish or frighten. Anyway, would you read anything into just three Currafin lads? Three turned down the opportunity. Now, we know Silk went to America, but two others, you'd imagine it's Farrher and Lundy maybe that have said they didn't want to go.
I would say so. And Silk going to America, and Gary Sice would have been another one who's retired.
Sice is retired, yeah.
So that would have been what, 6-7 in total, which is probably inaccurate.
Yeah, Walsh said 6. Three came in and three turned it down.
Yeah, that would have been fair enough. But just looking at or thinking about that with Shane Walsh, Comer, you're frightening me about a week and a half out from the Mayo game. But just going back to, like, I think they opened up a bit against Dublin, as Keane was saying, the kind of that their game is going to develop a bit coming into the championship. But I think that game against Dublin was massive for them, not only because it showed that they could kind of compete at that level, but the thing about Galway in the last few years is they've absolutely flattered to the Stephen Crow Park, and they're big. Their big defeats have come and gone back. They were terrible against Kerry last year, even worse, I'd say, against Tipperary the year before. So that, because their record in Croke Park for years have been terrible. Yeah. Like, I know it's only a small thing, but it'll be a monkey off their back coming into the Super 8s if they get there, which I think they will.
And Salt Hill is one of those pitches that it's not easy to play there because the wind is terrible and it's always windy there.
Yeah.
And it's one of those places that it's usually a long drive
for
everyone.
It's a bit of a new bridge. It's a horrible place.
Yeah, it's a new
pitch
bridge.
It's
the worst place to attend a game ever. It's just because it's stuck in the middle.
Yeah, in the middle of a bloody estate and all, isn't it? Like, I mean, it's like, how do I get back around to the other side of this ground?
Oh, you're looking at 3 hours getting out of there anyway.
But it's even like Kerry going to Galway. Like, it's an awful distance for a lot of teams as well, which travel, we know. Like, the Super 8s is going to be great in that regard, that the home game is going to be great because any team has a chance at home. And this has always been the frustrating thing about Croke Park, is that that's Dublin's home. So all teams are always coming there, whereas now they'll all have that one chance of getting 2 points at home. So, like, whatever about some people always talk about the Super 8s being a disaster. The Super 8s is going to be brilliant. The year in its totality is a disaster, but the actual Super 8s, the home away in Croke Park, I think July is going to be brilliant.
Even for fans to make a weekend of it, like to go down to Salt Hill for a Saturday night if the game is on a Saturday night or a Sunday, it would be great.
Yeah.
Just for the economy of those local towns as well. So
yeah, okay, quickly lads, Tyrone, because we want to give them a mention, because, like, I mean, Mickey Hart has been talking about Dublin being beatable. It might be, some might say it's kind of, you know, brave for Mickey Hart to be talking about that considering the hammering Tyrone took last year. A lot of the noises were coming out that things were going to change in Tyrone and they're going to have to change their style. Monaghan saying some similar things. There's more evidence of Monaghan having changed a little bit than Tyrone having changed anything. All they've done is give Lee Brennan a guaranteed start and play two up instead of one. That's pretty much it, lads, so far with Tyrone. So, like, is Mickey Hart is obviously putting that defeat to Dublin down as rabbit in headlights, startled earwigs, we didn't show up on the day, that's not us, that will never happen again. I think Mickey Hart trusts that system enough to go, that wasn't us. We can do better than that. And to an extent, if Tyrone played Dublin 10 times, that result's only going to happen once or twice.
He is right, and to a certain extent. But I just think you have to look at the players that Tyrone have from the games that we have seen of them. I don't think that they can really play too many other ways. I think that the way they play is their best approach to playing the game, because a lot of their players are very, very good ball carriers, very athletic. They cover the ground well. And now, look, maybe it's due to the style of play, but whenever you watch them, I don't see a huge amount of what appear to be quality kick passers of the ball, or guys whose first instinct is to lift their head and deliver the ball with the foot. Their first instinct is always to carry the ball or to look to the guys beside
them. That's because there's too big of a gap. They've actually never an option of a kick pass.
I think that's just their natural game anyway for a lot of them. And what you're trying to get maybe is that you're looking to get the ball to Peter Hart to maybe deliver in sort of quality ball inside. The one thing I think they're missing, though, when you compare them to the other top teams, is I think that they are missing
a real physical presence in their full forward line. I know they've played McShane in there at times during the league, but he spends most of his time outside, coming out the field. Now, if they do leave him in there and leave himself and Brennan inside, or Bradley or whoever it may be, I think that that's could potentially be, you know, a kind of a potent threat up front for them, because they have such brilliant runners coming from deep. But you do need to have some form of a target man, and in fairness to Bradley, he was doing huge work for them, but there's only one type of ball that you can deliver into a guy like Bradley. Yeah. If you have a McShane in there alongside him, it gives two options to the guys out the field. I know Conan McCann, I think, has played in there at times as well during the league, but it is something that they need to make a fixture in their team, I think, if they're to step on a level and become an All-Ireland contender.
Yeah, they can give Bradley some decent ball at times. They can give diagonals. It's just that they don't get into the position in the half-forward line enough to be able to give those nice ones. You know, that kind of a way. It's just their whole structure doesn't kind of facilitate good kick passes. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah, and like if you say if like for the likes of Niall Sludden, whoever, sometimes his first option, rather than to look up and kick it in, would be to take a man on. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes you wouldn't blame him because he's so quick. You know,
they have runners. Yeah, they have a lot of runners.
But I've rarely heard Mickey Hart so prickly this year when asked about, kind of, because that's been put to him a few times about, you know, do you need to change your system after what happened? And you can't really blame him either, because he'll point to the scoring statistics, whatever, he'll say that, oh, should we scored more than anyone last year, or it was clearly working apart from one game. And you said he didn't see it as a systems failure, it was an execution of the system rather than the actual system itself. So I can't see them playing any differently, but whether it'll be enough to beat Dublin if they come up against them, I wouldn't be so sure.
It's nearly Arsene Wenger. It's just pure stubborn at this stage with Mickey Hart. He's like, I'm convinced this is going to work and I'm not changing for anyone. Because the problem with Tyrone, and we know this, is that because they've so many men back and because they've no half forward line, they have no kick pass option. So they've only got hand pass option. So how easy is it to defend against a team where you know they've only got a hand pass option? When you've got two options, it completely messes, like, you have a whole other thing to think about with your defence, is that they can move this a lot faster. It's just so easy with Tyrone because they've only got that one way, and that's just the frustration with Tyrone. And they'll never turn the ball over and stop and let a few go up. They just know one way, turn over, boom, gone. We're all breaking, and that, you know what I mean? That's kind of it. And look, it works against some teams, but I don't know. Maybe if Tyrone get, again, Oma, good home venue for Super 8s, a long distance for some teams to travel, and a whole lot with that as well. So I think they're the only teams potentially to beat Dublin. Monaghan, get a mention, that could beat them at home. Outside of that, that's probably it for the Super 8s. Right, we'll be back in a second with some predictions.
Conan Doherty, who's a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with it, man.
Okay, so we're going to start off the predictions with Brian Sheehan and Owen Mulligan, because I was out at Paddy Power, the head offices, on Tuesday, and the two lads were revealed as ambassadors for Paddy Power and columnists for Paddy Power News. So if you want to see any of the lads' articles and their thoughts on the championship, go to news.paddypower.com. So here that is. All right, lads, we'll start with the provinces, and I think I'm going to avoid Leinster because I don't think there's any doubt who's going to win Leinster. It's been one-way traffic for, I don't know how long, 13 of the last 14, 12 of the last 13, Dublin have won. So we all agree Dublin are going to win Leinster.
Yep.
Okay. Are we all agree Kerry are going to win Munster? So will we leave Munster out of it as well? Like, is there two provinces we can just skip?
I don't know. I think you should be very careful of that, because we've gone that attitude, you could get beat. No, I think Tipperary, if you looked at the work that Liam Curran's done with them, he's really brought him on leaps and bounds. Could have came up to Division 1 this year, lost to Cavan, I think, in the last league game. They're improving. Cork have the capability of coming to Killarney or going to Parkwick, even beating Kerry. But again, at the moment, I think you just don't know where Cork are at. They have the capability, but look, you would expect Kerry to come out of Munster.
Would it be fair to say that Kerry would be a little bit more concerned about Tipperary even in Cork at this stage? Is that how much improvement they've made?
I think be worried about you couldn't just be writing off Cork either. Don't mean just I just think it's the emergence of Tipperary, how much they've improved. You know, they were really competitive in Division 3, got promoted, really competitive in Division 2, and as I say, missed out on promotion on the last day at the Cavan, you know, so they're obviously making big strides, and if they're competing like that in Division 2, get to Division 1, they're going to cause any team problems.
Yeah, exactly. So, Muggsy, are you going for Kerry and Munster?
I'm going for Kerry, and I just think you can never write off the Kerry men. They're, you know, rebuilding again, and, you know, a couple of big high-profile retirements, and the young lads are coming through, and I was saying to Brian earlier on about Clifford, I can't wait to see him and come Championship too.
Yeah, he's really good. Sean O'Shea as well is just, yeah, is just as good. Right, we'll get to the two provinces that are up for debate, more of a debate than the last two. So Connacht, Roscommon, Mayo, Galway all won it in the last 3 or 4 years. Big one, Galway and Mayo. The winners of that would be favourites, obviously, to win it. How do you see that one going, Muggsy, that province?
I'm going to put Murnag on the line here. I think Galway's the up-and-coming side. What a league they had. And they come up from Division 2 and, you know, really stamped their authority all over it. I thought they were unlucky not to beat Dublin in Croke Park that day. Just maybe a wee bit of inexperience, but with the Tyrone man training them and Paddy Talley, you know, what a game, what a trainer. His knowledge of the game, and he seemed to have helped you know, develop their defensive game and their attacking game. The Vinette product with Comer in full forward, I think he's a tremendous player, like a fancy Galway.
And there's a bit of steel about them now as well, which I'd say he's brought to them, hasn't he?
I read a couple of articles there that, you know, they're over saying they're over physical. You can never be over physical. They bring a great intensity to the game. They're in your face, and I think that's, you know, it showed in Croke Park against Dublin in the National League final, the first half especially. They probably ran out a bit of steam, but, you know, when you're competing against Dublin at that time of the year, you know, come Championship time, they'll be picking.
Yeah, exactly. Brian, how do you fancy Connacht going?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Galway, to be honest. You know, Mayo, just for me in the league, have been too inconsistent. I don't know where they're going to get the form from to go and trouble Galway.
And Galway to beat Roscommon then in the final, lost to them last year.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, maybe attitude might be plays an awful lot of part in that. You know, I think that they were probably, look, I think they were caught off guard. I think they probably didn't, they were having beaten Mayo, thinking this was done and dusted. But I think Galway are the up-and-coming team. As Owen said there, they have a fantastic system of play. And what they have is they've actually got forwards that can score. They've got serious pace and they're physical, and they've got scoring forwards. And I think that's where Mayo will struggle. I don't think they've found a forward yet that's going to score. Killian O'Connor, I think, is supposed to be struggling. He's going back.
I think it's a hamstring.
You know, so again, but I still think Mayo haven't found that forward they need to kick on that to that next level. Whereas I think Galway, they have dangerous forwards that can score. They have four or five forwards that can really cause you trouble. And like, they have pace, they have strength, they have power, and they've got finishing ability. So for me, it's going to be Galway.
Okay, so we've got two Galways. We'll go up to Ulster then, and Tyrone are the dominant team up there. You could make an argument to say Ulster's one-way traffic as well.
It was for 2 years anyway. Tyrone were streets ahead of everybody, even their physique, even their strength, and just the way they played. But I think this year maybe Donegal will have something to say, and Monaghan will have something to say. I'm totally writing off Derry and Armagh, so I am. I think their streets behind everybody. But Donegal were very unlucky to be relegated. I watched a few of their games, beaten by points and 2 points. But yeah, you know, some of their play and some of their game time was brilliant. But it's Tyrone's. I think it's Tyrone's to lose. I think they've found. I've been calling for him for years. Young Brennan there. He's prolific in Tyrone League and Tyrone Club Leagues. He's racking up serious scores, 1-7, 1-8, and he's a free kick taker, which I think Tyrone struggled over the years in important games. They've missed important free kicks to draw games and to win games. People say you can carry a free kick taker if he's 100%, 10 out of 10 man, and he certainly is. All right, you know, he's not the one Mickey Hart wants with tackling and tracking back and things like
that.
Do you know what I mean? And look, we all have been there. But he's a scorer. He's a scorer. Yeah. And that's what, if you give the ball to him, and he's tenacious and for the size of him, he'll win a 50-50 ball for you, and that's what Tyrone needs, an end product. And with boys, you know, like Darren McCurry pulled out there, a couple of other ones have pulled out. So look, it's all up for him. It's all made for him. So I hope he lights up the championship.
Do we think you know, the talk before this year was that Tyrone might change their style of play, and Monaghan, there was talk they were going to change their style of play. I'm not sure if Tyrone have dramatically changed it. They might be leaving two up now rather than one.
I think you're right, but I've watched many of the Tyrone games this year. I was saying to Brian there yesterday, Dublin play with that blanket too, but they've an end product, and that's why it's maybe papering over everything that people say about this blanket defence. But Tyrone, like, sometimes you looked up the field and Tyrone had one forward, or maybe not even a forward, and it's very hard to get form if you're one of them inside forward line and you're playing left half back, you know. So I think they need a presence up there. I think, you know, Brennan has stepped up. Michalski's coming back, but I was sad to see McCurry go. I definitely was. I thought he was going to be the next big thing. I had a season with him myself, and he's racking up serious scores for his club now. So maybe next year he'll be back, but I think Brennan's the key for Tyrone this year.
Okay. Brian, how do you see Ulster going?
I think it's going to come down to that game between Monaghan and Tyrone. Do you know, it's pity it's the first game. Be great if it was the Ulster final, but I think the winner of that game will win the Ulster Championship. As I was saying to Owen there as well, Tyrone, they have the players I think that can play exciting football and attractive football, but for some reason they're just sitting back and it's hard to watch at times. If Tyrone can unleash the shackles and I think go for it, I think they will win the Ulster Championship. Monaghan, I think they'll get fierce confidence after beating Dublin in the league. I think they realise now they have the capability of doing that. I think they've improved Monaghan as well because they've found a few extra forwards that can get scores now from. They're not totally reliant on Conor McManus, and I think that's a big thing for them as well. But look, I think it's going to come down to that game. I think the winner of that will win it. Donegal, as Owen said, I think they had a good league campaign. Very unfortunate not to win games, but I still don't think they'll I think Monaghan or Tyrone would be Donegal, so for me it's going to come on to the winners of the Tyrone-Monaghan game.
And just quickly on Donegal, do you know the story Joe Brawley had that they're training in Queens and they've hired three security guards to what because we were speculating on the podcast, what could a spy kind of tell? Maybe kickouts? I mean, like, their team is pretty predictable, like whether Michael Murphy plays inside or outside, but your teams will prepare for that anyways.
It's just to get that wee extra edge, you know. People or spies are going to look at the kickouts and formations to play, and you know what way their midfielder is going to, you know, adapt to things and just different things like that. But it's going to have to have security guards in for a game now. Yeah.
Well, we'd have Philip up in the tree.
McGuinness had your man in the tree. Did you spot him when you were training, or how was he uncovered?
It was one of the fellas in the looks after the pitch that we were training, kept an eye on this fella above inside the tree. So I think when went around.
Did word get around to all of you then?
No, it wasn't until afterwards. I think that rumour has it now that he was spotted and he fell out of the tree, and on the way out he dropped his wallet, so I'd have to find out who it was.
I actually know the fella. I'd met him. He's a friend of McGuinness's. So
yeah, I think someone said was he the best man in his wedding or something.
Yeah. I'm not going to say his name now and absolutely expose him altogether. You did a good enough job. Right, All-Ireland champions here, lads. Muggsy, I'll start with you.
Oh, you can't look past the Dubs, you know. You definitely can't. They seem to be going from strength to strength, even, you know. You know, even when they're not playing well, it seems to be that last 10 minutes, last 15 minutes, they just don't know how to, you know, be beat. You know, they're exceptional inside. Even with the likes of Connolly not featuring at the minute, I don't know what the crack is with him, but I would definitely love to see him back. I think Championship needs figures like that, but they seem to replace everybody that, you know, it'd be starting for them. Like the likes of Brogan's injured, and there's just another man to come in, and you know, I just can't see anybody beating them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Brian, are you going to make a case for anybody else, or?
I don't think it's hard to, because they've just been so dominant, so consistent in everything they've done over the last couple of years. I think there's probably only maybe two other teams that have the capability of beating them. That's probably Galway, maybe Kerry. I think if Kerry, depends on how they go about it now, is bringing the young fellas in, to how he's going to integrate the team, the senior fellas and the younger fellas. I still think Kerry have the personnel to put up to Dublin, but whether they'll get the performance out of them or not, I don't know. But at the moment, I think you can't look beyond Dublin.
Okay, two Dublins, right. Player of the year, Muggsy.
It's a toss up probably. If Donegal go far, which it's. I think he was one of the players of the league, was McBurdy. Yeah. He was exceptional. Like, he was exceptional.
You need to make an All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the only thing. I thought he was exceptional, and he looks fit, he looks hungry for the ball. But you can't look past Rock when the pre-kicks are firing in for Dublin and stuff, and he's clinical. And as I talked about earlier on there, 10 out of 10 man, that's who you look to.
Okay. Dean Rock, what about you, Brian?
Yeah, look, as you say, he's an important player. He's, you know, the amount of games he's won for Dublin with free kicks alone, you know, and his consistency is fantastic. I'm going to go for someone like Comer. I think he's had a fantastic league campaign. I think Galway will go to an Ireland semi-final. You know, and you just saw the performance he put in against Dublin in the league final. That was fantastic. So I'm going to put my neck in line now, and I'm going to think if he continues on that vein of form, I think he could really have a cut off it.
Yeah, and young player of the year, just pick which Kerry player.
Sean O'Shea. I do. I think this fella is going to be a serious years baller. I've seen him blow up playing, you know, Comley Championship. You know, he's a young fella. He's got serious talent, and I think he's going to be a big player with Kerry as well, but I think he'll be the young player of the year.
You're going for Clifford, Muggsy.
Here, look, as I said, I loved watching him minors. I love somebody who can, he's a team player, but he's also an individual player. He can light up Croke Park with his magic, and I'm a big fan of him.
Okay, finally, top scorer.
I'm going to have to go for Rock again.
It's Rock or Killian O'Connor,
yeah,
really, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Sean O'Shea could have a shout, maybe.
Yeah, but I think Dean Rock, I think with the amount of possession that Dublin have and the amount of, you know, ball that they have, they get frees, and, you know, he's putting over 90% more of his frees, so I think, yeah, Dean Rock.
Here's one, because both of you are free takers. Is it fair that free taking is included in top scorer? I know you're both going to say yes. I think
Without doubt.
It has to be.
What if I run past three fellas, get hauled down, get a really bad dead leg out of it, 14 yards out, and you come up and tap the ball over the bar?
You had got the foul, give him a pat in the back and say cheers, man.
I think the fella pulled down 14 yards should be allowed to tap that one over, no? I don't need you coming up with your routines to tap that. Okay, so freeze are included. Okay, lads, thanks very much. So I don't even want to ask you about this, Cian, because, like, I mean, you're a free taker as well. You can't objectively look at this. Free should not be included in top scorer. There should be a free taken. And then again...
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. No, scores from frees don't count. I forgot that. I forgot that at the end of the game, what they do is they subtract the scores you get from frees and then decide who wins the game. Yeah,
but you're not taking into account the example I gave the lad, where I sidestep past three lads, outstanding run, get poleaxed by the last defender, get a dead leg, can hardly move, and you tap over my 14 yard free.
When did that ever happen?
That has happened.
But sure, look at Wooly, if you were good enough to kick it over, you would be taken.
I think if it's a 14 yard free, the man that's fouled should be allowed to tap that over. Is that not fair enough? That has to be, because no one's going to miss a 14 yard in front of the goals. That should not be given to a glory hunting free taker. I don't care.
Would you still do it a point down in, like, the last minute of injury time? I'm still happy to take
Desi Dolan did miss that. Yes, one, didn't he? I don't know, that was maybe a bit further. You can't take a free from 14 anyway, can you? You have to bring it out to the 21, don't you?
No, you just can't take them quickly, apparently. I've been told that.
Oh, is that it?
Okay, right.
Well, we'll run quickly through the provinces because we're gone way over time. Provinces for me, lads, is Dublin, Kerry, Tyrone, and it's so hard, the other one. I'm going to go for Mayo because they can't keep losing to Galway, so I'll go Mayo, Tyrone. Jeez, it's pretty much what my predictions have been for the last 5 years. Go on, Connor, you can go next.
I'm the exact same as you. Yeah.
Okay.
And just about go Mayo.
All right, Cian.
Yeah, I'm going to throw Galway for Connacht.
You think Galway?
The same, yeah.
Okay, right, and that's fair enough. So All Ireland champion.
Did I say Meade for Leinster?
On the hard side of the draw. Well, it's better get Dublin in the semi than in the final,
get
right?
Get them in the semi final when they're cold. Yeah, catch them on the hop.
You can't catch them in Navan in the semi final. Would be great, wouldn't it? So All Ireland champions. Ah, look, I don't know. Last couple of years I've gone for Mayo, I think, but I'm just like, I think the Super 8s, this show has convinced me that Dublin will win the All-Ireland because they could potentially come a cropper in Killarney maybe they can't come a cropper in Killarney. It'll be somewhere anyway. We've called out who they're. I think Leinster and Munster champions are in the same group, are they? I'm not sure anyways, but I think they might come a cropper in the Super 8.
Nonetheless, you're going to guarantee they're going to be beaten in the Super 8.
But I think Dublin win the All-Ireland.
Yeah, I'm going Dublin as well. I think we mentioned that maybe a slight decline in quality earlier on, but the thing is, while Dublin might have to decline, the other team, some other team has to make the jump, and I don't think any team is equipped to make that big of a jump to beat Dublin.
Yeah, so just to get it right, Leinster champions are in with the Ulster champions, so potentially Dublin might have to go away to Omagh or might have to go away to Ballybuffet which is like Ockram and like Newbridge and like, where was the other one we met? Killarney.
And
these places
forget,
are very hard to
Mayo
go
are, Mayo are going to lose in Connacht. They'll end up in that group as well.
Jeez, they could. Could be a group of death. These Super 8s are great. So who are you going to win the All-Ireland
Keith? Well, after going on there for a few minutes earlier on that Dublin aren't going to win, can I just say can I just say anybody apart from Dublin just to get myself out?
Any other team? Indeed. Right, well listen, the bookies will give you good odds on that.
Kerry, Mayo or Galway?
Right, player of the year, I'm going to go for Kieran Kilkenny. I think the way he's started the year so far, I think it'll be a dub at All-Ireland Champions. You want to be have an outstanding year. We've seen Bernard Brogan win it from semi-final, Peter Canavan I think before, or losing the final. Very rarely it
Andy
comes
Moore and Lee Keegan last
Andy
years.
Moore and Lee Keegan, yeah. So like, I mean, you have to get to a final. I'm saying it's very rare to win it from a semi.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, Comer's into the mix. Do you know, then you look at Kerry, like so one of these young lads could do with Sean O'Shea. Like, we'll get to young player of the year in a minute, but that's going to come from Kerry, right? But Kieran Kilkenny for me, the way he started the year, the fact he's full forward, getting scores always turns heads, and you know, I think he's playing to his strengths and it's him for me.
I'm going for Brian Fenton. I think over the last 3 years he's been the best player across the last 3 years, probably unlucky not to win Footballer of the Year at least twice in the last 3 years. I think he's reached a level that he doesn't drop below. He's always 8 out of 10, sometimes 9 out of 10, sometimes 10 out of 10. I've only seen him struggle once, I think, against Kevin Feely, and maybe the odd time against David Moran, but he's so consistent and so consistently brilliant that I think he's going to win one eventually, and think it could be this year.
Okay, you have to. Owen Mulligan and Brian Sheehan went for Dean Rock, which I thought was an interesting one.
Yeah, well, I suppose again, I'm just to be awkward and be different.
Contrarian.
I've said Dublin aren't going to win it, so I can't give it to one of their players.
You can't. No.
So you know, outside of that, you're looking at Comer for Galway, and the one I'd love to see him win it if his season goes well, because he's just such a likable player, and who actually on top of it all now, I'm after reminded Mayor after winning two in a row. So Aidan O'Shea to lift Sam, and you know,
God, well, that shut a lot of people up.
Yeah, it really would. Yeah, so that'd be a great narrative for the
Aidan's
summer.
Captain
mind,
this year.
I agree with Keane.
Aidan's captain this year.
I know we could all eulogise about how great Aidan O'Shea was and how
the narrative would change. But you
there.
Know, some people have such egos that they'll give themselves credit for giving them that kick off the arse. I mean, that's how this works.
Oh, his mindset changed from all the criticism.
Is he still doing the full Monty the night before the goal again?
I was told before that's pre-recorded.
That's a video. That's
the video, yeah. No, I got that wrong.
Our club did the same fundraiser. Okay. It's a pre-record from a few weeks before. It's just played on the night.
Okay, right.
He'll be at home tucked up in bed by 10 o'clock. That's the leader he is.
That's important, because that was pointed out to me afterwards, that he will not be there stripping two nights for, which I thought he would be. Top score, well, young player of the year is going to come from Kerry. I think we're all agreed on that. Sean O'Shea, David Clifford, I think he'd be crazy, because even if he gets to a semi-final, I think these two fellas will light up the championship. Mayo, nobody jumping out at you as young player of the year. Dublin, Conor Callaghan could win it again.
He's
potentially
eligible again,
eligible again.
What is it, under 25s like the Premier League?
No idea.
Young player of the year, you're probably looking at some of the younger players from Kerry. In fairness, Sean O'Shea is probably going to be a good shout, although David Clifford is such a media darling that if he plays even at 75% well, he'll get young player of the
year.
It's true.
It's
either him or Conor Callaghan, just on reputation.
Yeah, no, agreed. Young player or top scorer. So you would imagine that top scorer is going to come from Dean Rock, Killian O'Connor. Then who is the free taker for Galloway? McHugh? They don't have it really. Shane Walsh takes them sometimes. They don't have anyone jumping out at you. Or you have Kerry, Sean O'Shea, who could potentially, he takes a lot of the frees as well. So outside of those free takers, that's where this conversation with the two lads came from. It will be a free taker. You're not going to get a top scorer that's not a free taker. So you're looking at the top counties free takers, and that's how you work backwards.
And
so
Dean Rock doesn't miss any games, does he? So
Dean Rock will be playing every game, and he'll walk Leinster. Realistically, if you're thinking anyone under Dean Rock, you need your head read.
Yeah, we're going to go for Dean Rock. Went for him last year as well, I think.
And it paid off.
Yeah, we'll go for him.
It's actually funny with Dublin that they walk Leinster so easily. You could be a forward for Dublin. You could get 1-3, 1-4, 2-2. And all you need then in one of your next four games is maybe two out of four good performances, and suddenly you're an all-star. Do you know what I mean? Hammer. I find putting yourself in the shop window for an all-star for Dublin is so easy, because you look back on your championship performances, and it's not really realistic to what might be happening in Ulster or whatever like that. But anyways, listen, that's it. Well over an hour there today, lads. Thanks very much. And we'll be back. Don't think we'll be back Monday. Might take the bank holiday weekend off, and nothing's on telly, so what the hell are we going to talk about? So we might be back the following Thursday. Right, good luck.
I was going to say, it never stopped us before.
finish yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.